Good afternoon, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Today, two positive and I think uplifting conversations. We meet Diane Sherman, a Spokane artist who merges yoga, journaling, painting, and drawing into her work, teaching, and way of living. We'll also check in with cellist and director of the Metau Valley Chamber Music Festival, Kevin Krentz, whose creativity has been more than stretched in these difficult times. Music on the way in is from the 2017 Metau Festival. Violinist Michelle Ross and pianist Tanya Gabrielian playing a bit of a Clara Schumann romance. This is Northwest Arts Review. Thanks to Spokane art dynamo Denny Carman, we've had the opportunity to meet a wide range of emerging talents. I'm grateful again to Denny for directing me to Diane Sherman, who I think you will find to be a unique, insightful, and truly interesting person. As is my wont, we began our conversation with Sarah's earliest experimentation with art, which, in her case, included unique access to a place often referred to as America's Attic, the Smithsonian Institution.
If we're going to go back, we sort of go back to when I was seven, and my mom worked for the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., and she would sometimes take me to work, and, you know, I was an only child, and she'd put me, you know, she put me in front of a painting or take me through the galleries, and I remember she just emailed me this, too. She said that I told her, I said, well, I can do that. And so she used to buy me postcards of the modern artists, and I would sit down and start, you know, doing my little copying and drawing. So it goes way back, my art, you know, my love of art. So I have to say I was definitely exposed to art all my life. And my mom was a big art lover, and obviously, you know, her career, I mean, it wasn't always in art, but she worked with the Smithsonian for quite a while. And then I feel like I was a speaker my whole life, and art became this place of just really being able to drop into the moment and drop into like the fun of moving color around and making marks and putting lines on paper and then expressing emotion through that movement and through those color choices and through paint. I mean, I'm particularly in love with color. People will ask me, like, what's your favorite color? And I'm like, yeah, no, I can't do that. that's like choosing a child that you love the best. Mm-hmm. So it started really there. And then I've always been a dancer. Like, as a kid, you know, also when I was like 10, I remember putting on music in my room or outside in the yard, just dancing away. And so I've always been a mover, and then I loved dancing, and yoga came later in life, and it particularly settled into my life after a hit-and-run car accident. So I was a pedestrian walking across the street in Oakland, California, where I lived, and I was hit by a car, hit-and-run, and left there with a broken leg and bruised up, and I would say that's the time when the journaling, even though I've journaled most of my life, a lot of my journaling has been has been written. That's when yoga and art journaling and the creative process of journaling took a deep hold and deep rooting. So yoga, I had been practicing yoga at that point already, and I took on yoga as my healing practice because I got out of physical therapy, and they're like, okay, you're good to go. And I'm like, oh, no, this range of motion is not acceptable, you know. So I spent quite a number of years not only, you know, studying yoga, but then I shortly after that started teaching And it's been an incredible path. Like, it's been the path to me that has brought together the spiritual and movement in the body, and then a way to really unlock the places that I needed to look at internally to keep moving towards wholeness. And of course, that's a lifelong journey, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I feel like yoga has been this path of moving towards wholeness in terms of, you know, my actions and my speech and how I walk through the world. Like the phrase, walk your talk, it takes a lot to actually do that. Mm-hmm. And we have to practice looking at ourselves and practice seeing where we're not doing that so that we actually do that.
The kind of art that flows out of who you are and your way of expressing yourself, how has that changed over the years?
Oh, well, okay. And I did kind of forget a critical piece, which was about 24 years ago. I went back to school to get a master's in arts and consciousness in Berkeley. And I would say that was a place where we studied the spiritual and art at the same time, and art as a sacred path to expressing not only the personal, but the divine or the sacred through a process of art. And so my practice of art is really one that's a very intuitive, very expressive. And then over the years, I've used mixed media and line work and drawing and paint. But I would say what changes is more the theme of what I'm doing with my work. Like, you know, this week has been so intense in our country, and the whole igniting of the issues of race and institutional racism, right? So I just did 7 paintings around the George Floyd death and what that's asking of us as a country and a people, and what it's asking of us to look at and what it's asking of us to change. All those paintings came out through my hands. I pretty much finger painted them all, except for using a few brushes. So it felt very visceral in the process of making it. Mm-hmm. And the reason that is that I feel like we're all a part of this issue. Like, it's not, I'm not a racist or you're not a racist or whatever we want to say. We have institutions that support that. And so I felt like my hands are in those institutions, you know, because I live within the systems. I've used my hands a lot in my art, but this felt really different. Mm-hmm. It felt very metaphoric, like, oh, and the energy of the emotion came through and out onto those paintings.
Mm-hmm. Are there events or other times in your life where you found a similar kind of energy flowing through you and being expressed in your art?
Yeah, I feel like one of the biggest things thematically about who I am on the planet is to find a way to bring about more love and equality, you know, and that all beings really need a place to feel equal on this planet. So mm-hmm. the immigration issues down at the border that we've seen in the past 4 years and people being held that way, like, these kind of things definitely ignite my artistic creation. Mm-hmm. And I will just say, taking it right into the journaling, like, the journaling for me, it's a relationship with the bigger art pieces that I do, that I sort of go into the journal and ask a lot of questions of myself, of life, of, you know, and get curious about the answers. And then the art process often teaches me about what it is I need to learn.
The combination of journaling and art, and I assume physical work also, is part of your life's work with others, yes?
I feel like the yoga path and the way that I've also approached the creative art path, they bring about an intentional way of living. And the journal gives me a place to work through different processes. Like, after that accident, I had 2 journals that were just full of healing. And so I spent my time really working on sending love to my leg that was broken and, you know, sending love to the person who hit me, hit and run. because I'm like, well, they have their karma. I didn't feel like I had time to spend on being angry. So thematically, I had those journals of healing. And the yoga path in and of itself is a very healing path. You know, it invites us into taking care of the physical vessel as a very first layer of our learning of yoga. And then once we start to feel a little better physically, we're like, ooh, okay, well, maybe I should eat a little better. And then, you know, and then that leads to, oh, wow, I guess my thoughts do have an impact on how I'm feeling. So we start to look more at our thoughts and we start to look at the emotional world. And so there's these layers of the onion that the yoga practice over time, if we really stick with it, move us towards cleansing and cleansing and cleansing out negative ways of being that just don't serve the essence of who we are to evolve into the beauty of the human that we're here to be. And I've taken that right into my own journaling and art practice. I love the journal as a place to just explore the various themes. And so like a bunch of themes to me would be, you know, healing, dreaming, visioning your life. You know, we only get this short life. It goes by, I mean, sometimes it feels long, but it goes by really in a nanosecond, right? And, you know, what do we want to do with that life? So we vision in the journal, or we might have a gratitude journal. Like I've spent lots of time in my journal working on gratitude or forgiveness. I've had a whole sections of different journals working on forgiving myself. And, you know, forgiving myself for the times in my life when I didn't have the skills to be a better person than I was at the time, because that was the best I could do. And it wasn't that great.
I'm curious about the connection then between journaling and the artistic expression. Where's the bridge between the two? Do you teach or advise specific ways of doing that, or is that just something that flows more or less automatically from, I guess it's a chicken and egg question too,
right,
which came first?
Right. So, okay, that's a great question. Yeah, so I do teach journaling, and so the synthesis of it is that in a creative, I call it a creative journal, but it's really an art journal. You know, you do have to learn the skills, right? So there are skills to it. So It combines writing. So, and I've been a writer my whole life. Writing, it combines painting, drawing techniques that are really easy to access. Like everybody goes, oh my God, I can't draw. Even I say that. I'm like, oh, I can't draw. But this particular way of drawing, everybody can draw. It's kind of amazing. It's called blind contour drawing. And right now I'm teaching a class and people are sort of blown away. They're like, oh my God, I actually can draw. But so I teach the skills while we are diving into the internal questions. And because I think the thing is, Tim, that doing that inner work can feel so heavy. And it's like, really? I don't really want to do this work, you know, like, do I have to look at myself? But if we're doing it in combination with a fun process, which is the art process, or at least I think it's really fun, you know, there's the play with color. So you get to learn color. You get to learn, like, what are your natural ways of wanting to make a mark? And so I have people go out kind of looking for different things, like, oh, here's a cork, or here's a Q-tip, or here's a leaf, you know, and how can we actually choose things that are representative of who we are, that we would choose, that somebody else, like, what would Diane choose and what would Jim choose to make marks with? Oh, well, maybe Jim would choose, you know, the edge of a matchbox, and Diane would choose a cork top, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that we start to learn to trust our choices, and we learn to make our own marks. And the actual process of learning creative process is an incredible teacher in trusting our own choices. And then there's this awakening of sort of joy through making these choices that come from the play, just as a creative process, while we might be exploring, well, let's say we're exploring gratitude. So we take a moment and, you know, we're doing a list about gratitude. And then we might take a couple of those things. Oh, well, I'm really grateful for the trees. And we might play with drawing a tree and using different colors and mixing different colors to make that tree, right? So it's a very, and what you said at the very beginning of, you know, asking me things like, how do these three things come together? And I have to say, I feel like it's been like at least 20-year journey, if not more, really like 30-year journey of bringing these things together in my own self to be able to express and process my life. But now I've started teaching art journaling, and it's really incredible to see people sort of opening to their own creativity and also opening to healing some of the things that, you know, that have been around in their lives for a while.
More about Diane Sherman and her work is available at dianesherman.net. I'm Jim Tevenin, and this is Northwest Arts Review, which is now available as a podcast from SpokanePublicRadio.org. KPBX's Vern Windham has been associated with the Mattow Valley Chamber Music Festival for many years. He recently talked with festival artistic director Kevin Krentz, who brings a refreshingly optimistic outlook to a range of things. First, here's a bit more from Clara Schumann from the 2017 Mattow Festival, again with violinist Michelle Ross and pianist Tanya Gabrielian.
Kevin Krentz, how many years have you been the artistic director of the Mattow Valley Chamber Music Festival?
I believe it's 13. I think that's how long it's been. It's been a good long time. It feels great to have such deep roots there, but 13 years.
And it's time to have encountered all kinds of things, including many of the traditional challenges of the Mattow, whether it's fires or smoky skies or anything. So you've already lived through a few things there, haven't you?
Oh, it's been some stressful summers, you know, with those fires. That was quite something. And we eventually had to move to June in order to escape that. But some years, you know, I remember sitting rehearsing in the barn at 103 degrees. And then some of the years we're all cold and trying to wear jackets with our shorts, you know.
But that's the beauty of an essentially outdoor music festival, is that we try to live with the elements, right?
Yeah. For me as a musician, you know, it harkens back to the summer camps, you know, where you're up in upstate New York or you're in Florida, where there's always something going on. And as a student, you know, you aren't necessarily staying at the Ritz. So, you know, it feels like that. And so I kind of embrace it and love it.
And so now kind of for the frustrating question, what was your dream and hope and plan for what would have begun here in a couple of weeks?
I know, right? Oh, well, this will be our second year of doing the festival in June, which comes with a different weather and a slightly different feel. So for me, I'm always trying to continue to refine the experience for the audience. I want them to have a bit more than just a concert experience. I want them to come and maybe picnic on the grounds, learn something through a pre-concert lecture or conversation, and maybe stay afterwards and all of that. So I was continually trying to refine that, make sure that we had enough heat sources and communicated with the audience to make sure that they were feeling that. But musically, I had a wonderful lineup of incredible musicians, and I was really excited about that. The first week was going to be our big 25th anniversary celebration. And so I had booked basically a lot of my favorite musicians, and we were going to have a string quartet lead E section and become a chamber orchestra. So we were going to just expand the forces that we had available to us for that first weekend and do some of my very favorite chamber orchestra pieces, which there are some incredibly moving and glorious pieces. When I was a kid, I had this wonderful recording. It was like the only classical recording I ever had before I was like 19. And it was given to me by my orchestra teacher right before I quit cello. But I did listen to it all the time, and it was St. Martin in the Fields. Neville Mariner was the conductor. Just an incredible recording with the Tchaikovsky Serenade for Strings, just incredible. And the Grieg Holberg Suite, which is just rousing. It just makes me think of flying along on the streets through the countryside on my motorcycle. It just has this incredible churning and burning kind of feel. Wonderful stuff. And then there's another piece by Holst, Gustav Holst, who wrote The Planets, who's an amazing composer, who I wish that he would have written more that we could be, you know, enjoying for chamber music and things. But he wrote an incredible piece of music for chamber orchestra as well. And so it was going to be a big celebration at the beginning of the festival. It was going to be really cool. But I'm hoping we're just going to move this program, same players as much as possible, to next summer. We're just going to have to do it next summer. Press pause and hit it next summer.
And in the spirit of those, of inaugurating those February concerts, was the idea of taking things imaginatively, as there's some deep down thoughts that, you know, since everything in life is different, that maybe there would be other seasons of the year, other opportunities, just depending on what hands were dealt to do things?
Yes. I very much feel like the Metau has a wonderful, you know, community. The only challenge we face is that it's a small community and it's rather remote. But my dream is that we are a presence musically throughout the year, so that, you know, the cultural life of the valley gets to be just deeper and deeper. So I would love to see us, you know, maybe a winter festival. That was kind of our stake in the ground for maybe a start of that, or maybe just a series that continues through the rest of the year, just to bring what the Metau Valley Chamber Music Festival brings to the valley on a more regular basis, which I think is important. You know, being a part of the community is the greatest joy I have as being artistic director there. Of course, it's fun to make music with my friends, and it's fun to put on concerts and things, but, you know, my wife and I got married there, as you well know, as our officiant, just last year. And, you know, the friends that we have there, it turns out that in many ways, our roots in the Metau Valley, where I get to spend only a few weeks of the year, are far deeper than those of our roots in here in Seattle. It's an incredible place. So I want to be there more. I want to be playing music there more. I think there's a lot of people who want it. So that's kind of the idea. And hopefully as the valley slowly continues to grow and gets to be known for all of the artisans who are there, we've got all kinds of glass blowers and photographers and painters and poets and composers and just wonderful creative brains working away in the Metau, that it will continue to grow.
And for those of us who keep trying to find the better side of life, there's probably going to be some interesting things that have been learned through the use of technology. And I know that you yourself are an inventor and a pioneer of things, but just the possibilities of maybe some ways that the world of music can have gotten extended through the overcoming these difficulties. Is that true?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's fascinating that, you know, now I'm having to teach on the internet, which, you know, is in some ways I'm surprised at how successful it can be. And obviously some of the obvious, you know, drawbacks, the fact that you can't really hear tone quality, and that our various systems that are in place right now, you know, for instance, when you play into the microphone on your camera, you know, automatically the microphone will adjust its what we call gain, the volume of your voice, based on whether you're whispering or talking loudly. And so that happens when you play music. And so when you play quietly, the student sounds loud. And when you play loudly, the student sounds quiet. I mean, it sounds about the same, you know. That's been an interesting thing. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if you see in the future, you know, on Skype and Zoom and FaceTime, that, you know, that setting is able to be turned off or adjusted in some way. That would be interesting. But there's definitely, I think, a lot of students now investing in learning audio technology. And I think that's going to continue to, once they have those skills, to helping them be creative in the internet realm and creating new projects and recording themselves and putting things together. There's been, I don't know, I've seen hundreds at this point of musicians I would never have guessed to see doing it, you know, making various projects. There's a wonderful app called Acapella, where you can record and then play with yourself many times. And, you know, there's some people who I would have thought would never, ever be on something like that doing it and posting it. And it's a whole new world. I think there's going to be a lot of changes from this. It's going to be interesting.
Because let's face it, you just can't help but do music, can you?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's my one of my major takeaways is actually, you know, yeah, we love to act like the audiences need us and that we have to make this music for them. But it's really we need to be expressive and create. And the process of creating is a joy that, you know, you just can't match. And if you do that on a regular basis, to have that taken away is like, you know, sucking the air out of the room. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing to see everyone just finding a way to continue to breathe, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, the Metal Valley has risen from the ashes before, and so it will be interesting to see the phoenix that can happen when the Metal Valley Chamber Music Festival returns. So thank you for persevering and keeping hopes and plans going.
Well, it's our pleasure. We will be back stronger than ever, and I think we're very much talking about a mid-winter presence, if not something sooner, I would imagine. And look for us soon. We're all desperate to see our audiences and all of our community again.
And while waiting for the phoenix to rise, you can acquaint yourself with the festival through their website, metaumusicfestival.org. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. My thanks to Vern Windham, Diane Sherman, Kevin Krentz, and the Metau Valley Chamber Music Festival. Two more things before we go. First, don't forget our virtual kids concert with KPBX folk hosts Caradwyn Irvine Spatz and Kevin Brown this Friday at 10, on air, streaming, and via Facebook. Also, check out the 18th annual Spokane Street Music Week, this year virtually at streetmusicweek.com. Some Josef Haydn from the Metau takes us out. Join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.